1 Corinthians, Paul says, "For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field. You are God's building. According to the grace of God which was given to me, as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another builds upon it. But let each one take heed how he builds on it, for no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ." In this podcast, we explore those who went the wrong way. We examine how it happened, why it happened, and who it happened to. But most importantly, we always ask the question, could it happen to us? Oh, Matt. So last week we started talking about the Westboro Baptist Church, right? We spent, I don't know, a good hour just talking about who they are, where they come from, why they're on our list, some information that you've come up with on their history and other things that were going on. And you got us into a good stopping point where we started to kind of realize some of the things that they were experiencing on the ground, right? Some of the people, right? Their day-to-day lived reality. It doesn't really match up with a lot of what their publications and public teaching would make you think. So it was a good time for us to stop and say, you know what, let's get into what their doctrine is and what they teach.
Wait. Are you referencing the H word?
The H word? Which H word are we?
The big H word. Hypocrite.
Happiness?
Hypocrite.
Oh, hypocrite. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. That's a word that probably would describe a lot of what was going on with Westboro.
Hmm. Yeah. I completely agree.
You know, I mean, yeah.
I wonder what it looked like sitting around with them eating some fried chicken. And some of the documentaries, they do that. They notice that they're doing normal things. You know, they're ostracized a little bit. They're kind of, they don't really hang out with other people much and things because they kind of hate everybody. So, like, the kids get together and do, like, dancing. This was before TikTok, but they were definitely doing, like, internet dancing trends and, you know, mm-hmm. Tootsie Rolls and stuff like that.
Are you showing your age there, Matt?
My age? You're almost as old as I am, buddy. We ain't that far apart. What was the dance when you was a kid?
Oh, you think I would remember that?
Didn't you ever cut a rug?
All of that. No. I was too busy spending time reading to have kept up with all that.
Dude, I never danced either. I didn't even dance at my own wedding. Did you dance at your wedding?
No.
Well.
I only went to my... Anyway, doesn't matter.
Yeah, we're getting off topic of the thing, but... You were you going to say you only went to your wedding because your wife made you be there?
No, I was going to say I only went to my junior prom. I didn't even go to the senior prom because I had no interest in going.
I had interest. It wasn't in prom, but I was there. But that's another story.
Well, yeah, that's for a whole different podcast.
So let's talk about the theology of the Westboro Baptist Church.
Yeah. So
where do we even start on such a thing?
My goodness. Well, I realized when we were talking about Heaven's Gate last month. If y'all haven't listened to the Heaven's Gate podcast, go back and listen to that. That was a good one. But as we were talking about it, I kind of realized we didn't dive super deep into their teachings and doctrines and theology.
Because they're kind of all over the place.
Right. Yeah. Their stuff was all over the place, but we were all over the place. You know, because we were trying to cover all of the craziness that is Heaven's Gate.
We should mention, we recorded that podcast at like, what, 3 or 4 hours at one time, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a long night. I think it was midnight before we finally called it quits. But, so this go around, I've picked three things that I want us to really focus in on. The issues that they have and why they're issues, right? Instead of
talking about the 47 million different things that they have wrong. Because there's a lot of them. Sound like a plan?
Yes, and I've seen your notes, and I think you drill it down pretty well into what the major things are. It's like a lot of things with, well, it's like everything with religion. Whenever you get off on some little things, they become big things.
Yep. And really, the first one,
the first thing that I've got in my notes sets the story for really the entire rest of all of their problems.
The rest of the story.
Now exactly. You
now you know.
Yeah. The rest of the story. Yep.
That's what he said.
Paul Harvey.
Yep. Paul Harvey.
Paul Harvey.
I need to get my son listening to Paul Harvey.
Oh. So their first issue that isn't really a theological mishap, right? It's not a... They're not teaching Arianism, necessarily, not that I could find. Arianism, the teaching that Christ is a created being. I know you know that, but we'll make sure that our listeners know that. Their first issue is they do dozens and dozens and hundreds of pages in their publications of just proof texting.
Define proof texting for us.
Proof texting is kind of the idea that you can find a verse that says what you want it to say. And the problem with that is you can find something in nearly every single piece of literature that exists to say what you want it to say.
Do you know what is easier to do that than the Bible? Shakespeare.
Shakespeare.
I have seen 100%. People do this before where they go and quote yep. Shakespeare to find what they want to say and then act like it's as if it was the equivalent to the Bible. Not necessarily yep. sincerely, but to make the point that you're making. That if you're right. just going to go pick out some words, you can pick out words and get what you want. Yeah.
The perfect example, right, going to Shakespeare is those people that proof text Romeo and Juliet as a love story. Romeo and Juliet is not a love story. It is a 2-day whirlwind romance that ends in 6 people's deaths. It is a tragedy. Right? The Bible is exactly the same way. Right? You can take and you can pick any topic that you want. And you can find a verse in the Bible that talks about that topic. Doesn't mean that's in context, right? Their big one is God hates everyone.
Mm-hmm.
That's their big one.
Now, before you go further on this real quick, I want to point out something. It's in your notes here. I just want to make sure you cover it because it's super important. They are KJV only people.
Yes. And if I remember right, it's 1611 KJV,
yes,
right?
1611 authorized KJV only. Not particularly so sure that's, why that's the case, but that's what they are.
Well, the 1611 would be the King James Version, right? There were what's the right word? Not reproductions, but modifications in the next version that was just a few years later, and so 1611 is the King James Version. The others are just knockoffs, according to those people that follow this kind of ideology.
Okay.
So, God hates everyone. There's a verse in Leviticus, chapter 20, verse 23.
You lost me at Leviticus.
I know. Exactly. And this is straight from their website, right? So I'm pulling their own proof text, so it's not like I went and found a verse myself that says God hates everyone. But it says, "And ye shall not walk in the manners of the nation which I cast out before you, for they committed all these things, and therefore I abhorred them." So they bowled this hole, therefore I abhorred them, I hated them, as their proof, right, that God hates everyone.
And yet already I'm reading this, and I'm looking at the first part of this verse, and I'm screaming, context, context, context!
Context, exactly.
And ye shall not walk because... in the manners of the nation, which I cast out before you.
Uh-huh.
Context.
There's a key word here, right? And I really should have grabbed my Greek Bible, but I didn't.
Grab your Greek Bible.
Well, but it's I gotta type and my keyboard's too loud.
Okay.
Because I don't have the physical Septuagint, but
we have to fix this.
I know, right?
You need a physical Septuagent. How do you spell Septuagent? Septuagent. All right.
So there's this word, for, right? I cast them out before you, for they committed these things, right? Because, for this reason, right, I did this, they did these things, and therefore I abhorred them.
So
he didn't
hate
them because they were humans, right? He didn't hate them because they were human. He hated the fact that they were opposed to him. They were sinful. They chose to walk the path of the demons and not the path of God. And therefore they were cast out. It has nothing to do with God hating them. It has everything to do with those people hating God. Context matters. And that's just looking at the English of the individual verse, right? There's a whole chapter 20 of Leviticus that gets into more context. But they skip that, right? Because their proof text is, I abhorred them.
One thing that I noticed in the interviews with them is over and over, even from a young age, they are taught these verses. They are not taught the whole chapters. They are taught these verses to say these particular things over and over.
Yep.
And I'm guessing you noticed in their publications that they use the same verses over and over to justify things.
Over and
right?
over again. Uh-huh.
And you would hear them quote them one after the other, after the other, after the other, after the other. Because they were just drilled into this. Just like we went into Sunday school and we got drilled to some certain verses. They were even more so drilled into certain verses. Megan Phillips Roper talks about her mom explaining to them about predestination and about... the elect by using her and her sister's Barbie dolls as they were driving down the road one day and basically explaining how one Barbie doll, you know, God loves and the other God doesn't, and God's going to send to hell
right.
and all this. And she learned these verses and to refute everything with these verses. And when you hear them respond on the picket line to people, when they do respond, sometimes they just remain silent, but often they do respond. They just repeat these verses over and over again.
Right. Yep. So we're going to get to this momentarily, but if you can find a proof text that says God hates everyone, there are plenty of proof texts that say that God loves everyone, right? I mean, John 3:16, right? For God so loved the world in this way that he gave his one and only unique son that the world might be saved through him. The end of verse 16, but or 17.
Were you not taught the King James Version as a kid?
I was, but Only Begotten is not the right translation of monogenes. But anyway,
I'm just pointing out, and this is kind of what we're talking about these verses here. You kind of added. I mean this in a very nice way. You added a translation to that as you said it.
That. Most people don't recognize. So,
well,
for God
so
loved the world.
That most people don't recognize, but you added that translation because that's where your study has brought you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were taught not to add to anything. They were taught never to study on their own and add to stuff. That itself
right.
was a sin. That was a big deal in their theology that nobody adds to this, and you don't interpret the Bible. Matter of fact, they were big about that. You don't interpret the Bible. We don't interpret the Bible. It is what it says, and that is exactly that. which is interesting mm-hmm. because they were interpreting it. They were just listening to what their grandpa said, interpreted it.
Yep.
But you added in right there, you're the way you understand that to be read, as you mentioned, right?
Yep.
But probably half our listeners heard, or when you said John 3:16, they thought the King James Version of that, of that verse.
Because that's the one everyone learns.
Right.
Yep. So let's jump to a fun one, right? Og of Bashan was a giant. In Deuteronomy chapter 3, right, for only Og, king of Bashan, remained of the Rephaim. Indeed, his bedstead was an iron bedstead. Behold, it is in the citadel of the sons of Ammon. 9 cubits is its length, and 4 cubits its width, measured in the forearm of a man. That would be 13.5 by 6 feet. That's a pretty big bed. So Og was a giant. Right? Again, context.
Why were they talking about Og being a giant? What did they have to do with anything?
Because this was at the time of the Israelites casting out the giant clans from Canaan.
Is this an example that Westboro was using, or are you just using it as an
example? No. This is just a random proof text that I came up with.
Okay. I thought this was something Westboro was saying. I was like, what were they talking about, giants?
No, but it proves the idea of literalist proof texting, right? You wind up with a man that had to be 13 feet tall.
Because he had a giant bed, he must be giant.
Because he had a giant bed, he had to have been tall.
No, man, right? I got a brother. He got this custom built bed. That thing is huge. It's like a double king or something or another.
Whew.
And he ain't a giant,
right?
Well, he's like 6'3", but you know,
yeah, he's bigger than me.
Bigger than me.
Og was not a giant in the physical sense, but he was a Rephaim, which makes him one of the giant clans, similar to the Nephilim. But again, that's context that if you don't have and you don't take into account, this literalist reading will take you down a weird materialist view of giant people that had to be 13 feet tall.
Okay. I've heard
so proof texting. Giants. Do what?
I've heard there were giants. They might be giants.
Yep. That's an interesting podcast episode that we'll have to come up with our own another podcast where we talk about this weird supernatural stuff from the Bible.
That podcast where we talk about the stuff we mentioned in the other podcast.
Right? Yep, exactly. Oh, this one that they do use, women cannot lead the church. From 1 Timothy, where Paul says, I say a woman should be quiet in church. She cannot lead a man. But, again, proof texting the opposite direction. And you know this, because I know that you've read the book Misreading Scripture with Western Eyes. Paul calls a woman, Junia, in Romans chapter 16, an outstanding apostle. So which is it? Can they not lead the church, or can they be apostles? Can't be both. So, the problem that I have with proof texting is it's not always wrong, right? Sometimes it can be. A lot of times it's wrong, but the issue is its misuse and misapplication. When you take a proof text and you put them into your daily life and the way that you do things, you're missing the whole point of the Bible, right? The whole thing is a story of Christianity. The whole thing, from beginning to the end. It's our story. It's what we're living right now. But if you only pick out a verse from Leviticus here, a verse from Timothy there, and say, this is how I'm going to live my life, you've missed the point. You've become a Pharisee. So we can make the Bible say whatever we want. You know, I mean, I could probably come up with a dozen different proof texts to make it say whatever you wanted me to. You look like you've got a thought.
I was just thinking about how we've talked about how other cults podcast approach things differently than we did talking about these cults. And your point there, where you're pointing out a perceived vulnerability in Christianity, where you can make the Bible say what you want. I appreciate that we're honest about such a thing. We are not saying the Bible's wrong. We're just saying that it's very possible to mess this up, you know? And
has to be read in the proper context. Specific
examples where it's easy to do so. And there are many more. Yep. You just did this for brevity, these few examples, right?
Right.
And I appreciate the honesty there. I mean, we are both, we have both preached the gospel. We both very much want to carry out the Great Commission, and we want to lead other people to Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that we want to be honest about that. And we're both proponents of that you should study and learn more, that we should move from milk to meat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going off topic from this a little bit, but that's what I was thinking since you asked.
Yeah. Well, this idea of proof texting is pretty common in groups like Westboro and Heaven's Gate, right? We'll go back to Heaven's Gate for a moment.
And more common, the more isolated they get, the more they go into themselves, the easier this becomes to do. Like I mentioned earlier, they were not allowed to interpret the Bible themselves. They were very much said, no, this is what it says. It says exactly what it says. But while they said they were saying they believe exactly as it says, it states clearly, what they were really preaching was what they had been told over and over again.
Right. Yep. So, you know, these groups want to have the perception of being scriptural and biblical, right? So they do, they pull these things out and they start using them. You know, I mean, Heaven's Gate, for those that were inside, it was a purely biblical group, right? Obviously it wasn't, right? They had some misapplied interpretations in their own proof texting that they did. Westboro is exactly the same. They will tell you everything that we teach is scriptural and biblical.
Yeah, they completely believe that. They really don't believe they're hateful. They believe they are, from their definition of what love is, they are showing love to the world by saying, God hates you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because they believe it's the truth and that love is telling the truth.
Right. Which it is. But, again, you know, they're, as we get into their eschatology, we'll see their idea of truth is, again, misapplied and misused. Which is the case for most cults, right? There's a piece somewhere that's misapplied. The problem, and this is why it's such a difficult thing to deal with, people who choose proof texting over rational thought, right? Because that's really what it is. It's, I can spit out 10 verses that tell you why you're wrong, right? That means that they don't have to think about it. They don't have to sit down and say, what do these things really mean, right? It's so very difficult to overcome a proof texter without proof texting yourself. Because they don't want to listen to rational thought.
So it's easy for you to argue the anti-verses, right?
Right. Yeah. So the, you know, Megan Phelps Roper, whatever her hyphenated last name is, you know, she talked about how people had asked her questions, right? Instead of those people just spouting the opposite verses, they asked questions to engage her rational side.
Uh-huh.
Right. And that's how you overcome a proof texter.
Right? You know,
you force them to explain why such a verse means such a thing.
Right, make them question themselves. You know, recently I was on Facebook, and I know you've kind of withdrawn from Facebook, and I'm working on that. I've removed it from my telephone, so I can only be on it when I'm on the computer now, which is helping me and making me look at my phone way less.
Yeah, it's
incredible. Also removed, what's the other thing on the phone I look at all the time? Reddit.
Yep.
And I've removed most fun things I've removed off my phone to try myself use it less.
Yep, I've debated on just going back to a flip phone.
Man. But anyways, I recently, and they may listen to this podcast, they probably don't, but they may, so I'm going to mention, these are all, everybody in this conversation is a friend, and they're still a friend no matter what was posted, right? A friend of ours, who we both are friends with, posted something about sometimes you gotta pick up the rock like David did and throw it at Goliath, basically. And I kind of counterpointed that and said, hey, you know, we don't need to follow the example of David. We weren't called to follow David. We were called to follow Christ. Let's follow the example of Christ and not throw the rock.
Right.
Because when he could and he was justified in throwing the rock, he just didn't. And let's show the love instead, because that's how we change the world. And that's how we follow what he told us to do. And then another friend of ours responded, well, you know, Jesus had the apostles carry swords for self-defense. And I wanted to just go counterpoint on this whole thing. And I realized that I'm kind of doing what you're talking about here. And I'm like, you know what? We could go back and forth on points all day long. I made my point. And there's no reason for me to go back and forth. Both of these people are friends of mine. The first one agreed with my point. He's like, hey, that's a good way to look at it too. Does that mean he's going to agree with me 100% of everything or even on this? No. But he acknowledged that. The other one kind of gave the counterpoint to me. That friend, if I were to counterpoint him, we would go back and forth forever until we decided we weren't going to argue anymore, you know?
Yep.
And that wasn't a wise thing for me to do. And I realized that I was kind of doing what you're talking about here, and that, you know what? I made my point and said my piece about it, and I should just let it go.
Yep.
There's nothing positive. I'm not fighting the fight for Christ here, you know?
Oh, God doesn't need a big brother.
There you go. I like that one. God doesn't need a big brother.
Yep. And you know, and that's my next point. I don't know if you were trying to segue us into...
Well, hold on. Before you start, I do want to add, though, that I do feel an obligation as a... I have to be real careful with my words here. I feel an obligation as somebody that people in my circle often look up to me for my discernment and following Christ. And I try so hard not to break that with people in my circle. And sometimes I'm not the best at that. But there are people in my circle who look up to me as an example to follow Christ. And I try to remember that too. You know, that I have to be in there. But go ahead with your next point. So I just want to add that little part that I feel like I'm in a position of influence that I need to maintain by being wise in my decisions. Absolutely. It is unwise to proof text things over and over, you know?
Yes. And it is not spiritually beneficial, right?
What are you doing with them words tonight?
Not
spiritually beneficial. There's a first point in a 3-point sermon right there.
Right. This theology section is where I've got the most notes. we're just going to copy my notes into the blog post and say, y'all just read those instead of writing up a whole thing.
You know, but, it's not a bad idea.
You know, right. You know, my point being, don't get caught up in the online debates. Right. There's going to be people, right, on both sides that are just spouting verses at each other. Don't get yourself in the middle of it. Don't jump into that mess, right? Because it's not spiritually beneficial, right? And if it's not spiritually beneficial for you, why are you doing it? And that gets hard, right? Because when you start thinking about the rest of the things that you do in your life, how many of them are not spiritually beneficial? But it always turns into a battle of the proof texts.
Every time.
Every single time, right? Now, there are some actual legitimate debates that are reasonable to go and listen to. But that Facebook comment war of who can get the last word in with the right verse, it's useless. I do remember listening to a debate between a Russian Orthodox monk and a Calvinist. Did I send you that one? Sounds probably sent you that one last year. Yeah. And it was the monk was using rational thought and trying to make his point, but the Calvinist kept trying to go back to proof texting. Everything that he wanted to do was proof text. And it devolved into, well, we're just done talking because you're not even going to try and listen. So if you want to know more about a topic, this is a PSA for our listeners. If you want to know more about a topic, go to a legitimate source. Right? Christianity Today is not a legitimate source for finding out about a topic. I'm sorry. Right? Find a legitimate Christian journal somewhere. Don't go to random blog posts, because then you're going to wind up on Westboro's page where they're telling you that God hates everyone. Right? Find something that's published by a legitimate group. You know, the Christian Research Journal is great if you want to go and learn about apologetics. Bibliotheca Sacra. It's from Dallas Theological Seminary, right? It's just their quarterly publication, right? There are lots of them. And if you can't get to those, ask your priest, pastor, minister, etc. Before you ask the internet, please. I'm just asking you, don't ask the internet until you've talked to your priest. If you've talked to your priest, pastor, minister, then you can go to the internet and say, hey, this is what they told me. I'm just sharing with you what I learned. And leave it at that.
So,
spiritually beneficial use of your time.
In seminary, we were taught that this concept here of your sources matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll just add the little disclaimer here. I didn't finish seminary. You have finished seminary. We mm-hmm. have both done some very Baptist seminary. And yeah. So I looked at it from that perspective. And one of the things that we were taught very much so, they didn't say go ask your priest because we didn't have priests. But it was very, very much impressed upon that no matter who you are, you could be super duper mega church pastor of the biggest, hottest thing in the world. You need to have your own pastor.
Mm-hmm.
It is unacceptable for you to be the only leader, right? You need to have your own pastor who's your pastor you go to. So it is important to have a spiritual father.
Mm-hmm. And, good choice of words.
Well, I mean, that's how that goes, right? We use different mm-hmm. words to describe it, but whether it's Baptist or Orthodox, it's kind of the same concept.
Yep, it is. Absolutely.
As for, you know, again, from a very Baptist perspective and the whole sola scriptura thing, that doesn't mean you take it from exactly the words it say. You need to know the context. You need to know what was happening at the time in the history. You need to know what's happened with the translation and different things like that. There's a lot to really study in scripture. Mm-hmm. And if you are one who is helping other people to study scripture and you're sharing scripture with others, it's even more important that you know about what you're sharing, right?
Yep.
And so that's why it's important to use like a concordance or a Bible commentary and to use one from a known good source, you know?
Right.
We wouldn't use the term consult the church, you know, go read what the church father said about it, but we kind of would do the exact, I'm saying the Baptists wouldn't.
Right. Yep.
But it's the same exact concept. We would go see what Spurgeon said about it or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Right.
Mm-hmm.
You would kind of go see what other leaders in the church have said over time.
Yeah. You would be expected to see what the Protestant church fathers said about it.
Right.
right? That would be Luther, Calvin, Spurgeon, Chesterton, etc.
Wesley. Since I've been reading about Wesley.
Yep.
Yep. Stuff like that. So.
Yeah. So, as far as Westboro goes, right? I know we kind of devolved just a moment there, but this is the problem with Westboro, right? Is they choose this type of debate style. It's not even debate. It's we're right, you're wrong, sit down and shut up mentality. And it always devolves into just a flame war back and forth. Nobody wins. Everybody loses. Nobody grows from it. So, proof texting. It's a big deal for them. And we see that in their publications. Oh my. These things. Their website is full of articles and publications and blog posts and PDFs. And one of them is 96 pages long.
And we'll mention that we have yet to mention the website. Not because right. we so vehemently disagree with them, because we do, but because just the name of the website would get us kicked off of Apple Podcasts.
Right, yeah. And I'm not even, speaking of the website, I probably won't even link to it in the blog post.
No need to.
I don't want to give them.
Somebody wants to go look it up, they can easily Google it and find it. It's not hard.
Yep. I'll make sure that I put links to the, or not links, but names of the specific articles in the blog post. So if you want to go read them, you can. But like one of them is, it's 94 pages, 96 pages of just proof texts. It's titled something or other. I don't even know if I have that one written down, but it's titled something, and it's just a list of Bible verses.
Wow.
In 96 pages, that's pretty much every verse of the Bible.
I said the whole Bible is like, what, 150 pages or something?
A little bit more than that.
A little bit.
A little bit.
You get that onion paper, you know.
Right? So, their first publication, the one that I sent you, the very first one that I even looked at, is their New Testament Church Scorecard. Did you go look at their scorecard?
I did not. I didn't know what the scorecard... Oh. Did you send it to me? Maybe I didn't read it.
I didn't look at this until I read your notes earlier,
and I was like, what?
Yeah, I think I sent it to you like the day after we finished recording Heaven's Gate, because I'd found it and was like, you need to go look at this.
Sometimes we get talking about something else and things scroll down the screen.
I know it. Stuff. That's how it goes. But this is a PDF on their site that is filled with questions. And the questions go something like this. The following describes what I see when I go in my church. A. Pictures of Jesus. B. Ornamental sculptures of Jesus on the cross. C. Other pictorial sculpture or image representations of religious symbols, e.g. crosses, Jesus, fish, images in stained glass, pictures and sculptures of Mary, heaven, stars, and gold and silver ornaments. Or D. None of the above.
Okay, so let's take the quiz. In your church, do you have A, B, C, or D?
Do I have to count each picture of Jesus or of the saints or of stars or just one?
That is a bad way to do it if it was your church, but yes, just
I know,
just,
right?
Do you have it at all and it counts that letter?
A and C, yes.
I don't think
that we have any. No, because the Orthodox are not very big on statues.
Okay.
But we do have a statue. No, it's not a statue. Nope, no statues.
Okay.
It's just a life-size icon.
A and C for me as well. Probably not yep. B.
Right. I don't know. I mean, like, one of the churches that I work with, they've got little bronze sculptures all over the place of different
of B
stations of the cross or something like that. It would be for B.
Yeah, I could think of a few churches you work with that would have B. But mm-hmm. I don't think the churches you and I go to have B. I thought your church would have B, but I don't know.
Nope. Okay, so.
So we got A listeners. And each.
Yep. So score minus. Right. So score minus 10 for each answer selected A through C. So I'm at minus 20. You're at minus 20. For example, if your church has a picture of Jesus on the wall, a sculpture of Jesus on the cross, a wooden cross on the pulpit, and a sculpture of Mary, you would score minus 40 points. So their point scoring is for each instance of that. So I'm at like minus 1,000. Because there's all 12 of the apostles. All 12 of the apostles again, and like every North American saint, and then like, yeah, it's a lot.
So now the church I attend has all the apostles in stained glass.
Yeah.
Has Mary, heaven, stars, gold and silver in stained glass.
Uh-huh.
Lots of pictures of Jesus around in different rooms and things.
Yep.
So yeah, we'd be negative. If you're counting each instance, we'd be negative quite a bit too.
Right. Yep.
So the reason probably be more negative than you is just because the building's bigger.
I don't know. Every single office has multiple icons in it.
Yeah.
Every building is full of it's.
We are pretty high icon heavy, huh? We don't call them icons, but yeah. We have a lot of this. Surprisingly, yeah. Have a lot of, considering we're Southern Baptists.
Right. Yeah. You need to come with me to Vespers one day.
We should do that. I'd be happy to do that.
Yeah. So for any answer other than D, realize that the wrath of God and hellfire abides upon idolaters. Idolatry is no small matter, and idolatry greatly angers the Lord your God. The New Testament says, idolaters shall not inherit the kingdom. Galatians 5:19 through 21, which is not that entire verse. But anyway. For answer D, score plus 10 points.
Well, we don't have answer D, so we're in trouble.
Yep, so we're stuck there, okay? The following describes the separate groups, sessions, classes available in my church. Sunday school for young children, youth groups for teens, adult groups, single groups, and or men or women groups, contemporary worship service, or D, none. Everyone, no matter age or gender, attends one service.
A, similar B, C, scoring and as D above. For me.
Oh, yeah. Same for us. Well, no. We don't have the contemporary. I guess technically, we do have the contemporary service.
If 1127 is considered contemporary.
I was going to say, it's the John Chrysostom liturgy and not the one before him. Who was it before him? James? Anyway. Yeah, so technically, but no. So similar scoring as above. Minus 10 points for everything other than E. And it's like 15 or 20 or 30 questions all like this.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Filled with pages between it of proof texts to prove why their idea of four bare walls and a sermon is the right thing.
And I've seen some of their church services, and that's pretty much what they have. It's a very, I've been in similar looking services where it's very bare bones, old school looking, very, very simple service.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know, on this scorecard, I don't know if you can see, but right there, that's Jesus on the throne, and that's St. Anthony. right over my shoulder. They sit there all the time.
There's also a fish up there.
There's also a fish up there.
What's beside the fish? The tall thing.
A candle stand that my dad made.
Blasphemer.
I know, right? So yeah, it's this whole thing, this whole scorecard idea. Right. The intention of it for them is to show why their church is right, your church is wrong. no matter what your church is.
Yeah,
right. Because even the tiny little church that I went to in Michigan, right? I mean, tiny, tiny, tiny little church in backwoods Michigan, still had pictures of Jesus, still had stained glass, right? It's so mind-boggling, this idea that because you have decorations, that you're an idolater. Again, we need another podcast where we just talk about these weird things, because idolatry is not pictures. It's nothing to do with pictures. It's all about sacrifice, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, we could talk about that a little bit, because I see the Anabaptist argument there. The Lutheran argument, even.
Yeah. So, filled with proof texts, just like everything. They have another publication called Bible Verses About the Hatred of God.
Who reads these publications?
I don't. Well, I did. But...
but not because you're interested and want to learn from them.
No, not at all. Yeah. So, again, dropping back to kind of proof texting, the prodigal son is the core teaching, right? I'm trying to pick the right words, right? Is the core teaching on the love of God. 100%. This kid who chose to take his inheritance early and leave his father, right, was welcomed back with open arms as a son. After his father had not seen him for years and was likely still sitting there just waiting on him to come back. The father in this case is God the Father. That's not hate. That story has nothing to do with hate, except for the brother's contempt for his younger brother, the older brother's contempt for his younger brother. And even then, he's put in his place by the father.
Do they display that as a story of hate?
No.
They use it as an example?
Pointing out, yeah, I'm pointing out this is the opposite of hate. You can't have this list of proof texts to say that God hates when that story exists. Now, if the prodigal son wasn't in the Bible, I mean, John says that God is love. So, yeah, there's still that one.
Well, and something important, I think, about the whole prodigal son thing is that you referenced that. I'm trying to make sure I have my timeline right, and I may be a little off. I think it's not long after the story of the prodigal son, but it might have been right before. Somebody asked Jesus why he's teaching in stories, basically. Mm-hmm. And he tells them that people are not ready to hear. So he teaches in stories, because that's the only way they're able to hear at that point.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He very intentionally, nobody said there was an actual prodigal son and this actually happened. That's not what Jesus was teaching. He was illustrating a concept for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important that we use that concept. So when we talk about proof texting and, you know, taking things out of context and stuff, there's a great example there of how Jesus was illustrating a concept by telling stories.
Yes. Yeah, it doesn't have to be literalist history.
And I find
for Jesus to have used it.
In my own life, the way I share things about the Bible, sometimes I share scripture in verse, but I often find myself sharing stories out of the Bible. Well, you Absolutely. Know, the Bible That's, says, da-da-da. Yep. That's the way it's been shared, passed down for, you know, a couple mm-hmm. thousand years.
Yep. Well, I mean, that's what we just did right here, you know, the prodigal son.
Uh-huh.
I didn't sit here and read the verses. right? Because that's not the point. The point is the meaning of what it is.
Right. But they were very big about reading the verses, and only those particular verses they kept picking out.
Right. Yep. They have a similar publication entitled Every Human Deserves to Go to Hell.
Fun.
Yeah. Isn't it great?
But I will mention I've heard sermons sort of like this. Everybody deserves hell. None are good, no, not one.
True.
Yeah.
But again, the emphasis is on the wrong syllable in this case.
The emphasis is the wrong syllable.
They're putting all of this emphasis on the hatred and judgment of God, and not on the fact that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us.
Uh-oh. Give me three more P's. You got a sermon.
So in this vein, right, the next one, I think it's titled The 5 Points of Calvinism, or Calvinism's five points or something. It's all about Tulip. Right, the 5 points of Calvinism, the total depravity of man, the something.
Oh, come on. We can't say out Tulip? I can't either. I'm going to have to Google it. But we got to Google this because it's important. Because Tulip is a big thing for them.
Unresistible grace? No, it's irresistible grace. Perseverance of the saints. Limited atonement.
Not to mention we should something. Know this.
I don't remember the U.
Here we go. Total depravity, unconditional election. That's that one.
Unconditional election.
Limited atonement, irresistible grace, and perseverance of the saints.
Yep. So Westboro is a 5-point Calvinist church. And I think it's in this document, they reference the Puritans quite a lot. They reference the Puritans in a publication about why God loves everyone is the greatest lie ever told. So like the Puritans before them, right, they're Calvinist, and they take it to its ultimate conclusion, right? Which means that the Puritans, like Westboro today, are quick to find those who were damned and declare them as such.
Now, I should interject about the Puritans here real quick. The Puritans are not an official denomination. The Puritans are a sect of the Church of England.
Yep.
And they varied quite a bit. As a matter of fact, there were three major branches of the Puritans who kind of went different ways. I don't remember what those branches were. There was the Congregationalists, the Presbyterian, and the... The other one.
The Methodists.
No, the Episcopalians. The
Methodists are considered, they're considered a branch of the Puritans.
Well, okay. So let's talk about that, though. But what I'm saying is, to say Puritans is hard to say because they actually had quite a variance in beliefs.
Right.
Which, you know, some had this part and some had that part. They were quite independent. And so it's hard to nail down what was exactly a Puritan thing. Our country is very heavily influenced from the Puritan immigration to America. Yeah,
Puritanism and Pietism that came with them.
Right, right. But I think it's important to point that out here as we're referencing Puritans, yeah, that there's quite a bit of variance and stuff. So we're talking about some particular groups of Puritans, and you mentioned the trials. You know, those would be some of the Massachusetts and that sort of stuff. But there is quite a bit of variance.
Right.
And they are not Westboro.
I mean, there's a lot of overlap between Westboro and the Puritan ideology of Calvinism. We're right, you're wrong. You know, witch trials. Some people were doing things differently. And so the Puritans, in an effort to show that the Puritans were the elect, burned those people at the stake. Or drowned them, or stoned them. They took the idea of you're damned, and so therefore It doesn't matter what we do to you, how we treat you. And that's a lot like how Westboro behaves. I think if we were in the same world of the witch trials, a lot of people from Westboro would be trying to burn people at the stake.
I think some people would point out that the Salem witch trials, which there were more witch trials than just Salem. They happened in Europe and in here and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And were often instigated by the Puritans, where the Puritans were in political control. But it's important to point out that the Salem witch trials, the Puritans were not actually in control. There were some Puritans accusers who started that, but it was more about the culture in general and fear of evil and other things and outsiders and differences.
Yep. And when you've got Jonathan Edwards and his wonderful story of God's holding you over the fire like a spider from a web, just waiting to cut it. That's how Westboro treats you, is God's just waiting to torture you. So the next publication of theirs, because I'm not going to go too much into Calvinism specifically. The next one is, How Can I Be Saved? Which is, it's you know, a pretty typical kind of document that you would see on a church website, right? Except in their case, because they're not only Calvinist, they're hyper-Calvinist, meaning they believe in God. Not only does God choose who's going to be saved, he chooses who's going to hell, right? Really, they just do a lot of talking about how, if you're one of the elect, God will save you. And that's it. Not a lot of, this is how you should live your life. This is, you know, come to our church and talk to us and let's work through this. No, it's a lot of Calvinist propaganda, for lack of a better term.
This was another sticking point where some of the Puritans disagreed with some of the other Puritans, because a lot of them had that doctrine of double predestination.
Yep.
But their sticking point was the idea of conversion. So they believed that if you were saved, you were saved. But there was a time where you were going to convert. Not that you could change what you were predestined to be, but that is the time when you would work that out with God, that you knew what you were, by that point, what you were predestined to be.
Right.
What I find interesting with Westboro is that often when they were asked about this, they themselves were not sure of their own salvation. They said you should follow scripture, you should do the way they said you should do things. I did not see a lot in interviews and stuff where people said they were right. They were often questioned about their own salvation. So are you going to heaven for this? And they would say, I hope I am. If I follow these things, I hope I will be. I hope that God will be. Because it was a reality to them that as people left the group, they would justify it by saying, oh, well, they weren't elect then. They couldn't have left if they were elect. When asked who else was right, they said, if you follow these things, then you're right. But they would never say any other church or group or anything was right outside. And one of the things I've heard some of the former members talk about is that they pretty much believe they were the only ones right, with some weird exceptions in that they thought that they would end up, tell me if I'm getting too far ahead on your stuff here. They thought they would end up leading the 144,000 Jews who would somehow convert, and that God was going to save, and they would end up being the leader of those Jews and teach them the right way. So they hated the Jews, but they thought they would go to Jerusalem and lead the 144,000 in the end times.
See, I hold that thought. I want to come back to that.
Okay. I thought I might be jumping ahead. Sorry.
Yes and no, but I have some questions. So this is a point where their lived experience that we were talking about on the previous episode and their documented doctrine seems to differ, right? Because if and when God calls you, right, in his irresistible grace, you're supposed to be baptized, and you're supposed to then strive to live the perfect life. And with as much as they harp on all of these sinful things, right, the lived experience of them being more like normal people, right, doesn't seem to fit that idea of striving to live the perfect life.
Right.
So that's interesting to me. I think it kind of puts them in that weird area of potential hypocrisy is the next one. So, but each one of these publications, right? So these things, right? They're documents that are just full of proof texting. But like the vast majority of these proof texts come from the Old Testament. And they come from, you know, points like previously when we were talking about proof texting. You know, they're not really accurate for the world today because there was specific situation around it. But they twist them into God hates everyone and wants to punish humanity. He wants to torture us all in hell. And I've got a little note. I've got to do a lot more research. But one of the very early heretics in the church was Marcion. And Marcion taught that the God of the Old Testament was filled with hate and judgment and wanted to destroy humanity. But he also taught that was not the same God as the New Testament Father of Jesus.
What?
So, yeah. So there's a little bit of connection with the hatred, right, and judgment and wrath of God here. But I don't think that they're necessarily coming out and trying to say that it's not the same God. At least not from the little bit that I've been able to read.
Yeah, I didn't see anything about, you know, polytheism or anything right. like that, per se.
All right, last one. Their eschatology, right? They're teaching on the end times. This one's hard. This one was really, really hard to nail down what it is that they teach. They don't have a whole lot of publications on their eschatology. The couple that I did find do center around the return of Christ, right? Which, for all Nicene Christians, which is the vast majority of us, it is a future reality. So it's not like they're teaching UFOs are coming to take them all away, like Heaven's Gate.
Well, one thing they did bring up during their interviews after 2008 mm-hmm. was that they believed that President Obama was the beast.
Which is pretty similar to how the CSA viewed things. Or would have viewed things, because I think for them it was Clinton. But
right.
Yeah.
But yeah, they believed that President Obama was the beast, and so they thought the end times were really, 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 really close.
Yeah.
That this was ushering in what was the end. And as a result of that, they kind of stepped up their picketing and things yep. even more. They definitely stepped up their interviews. They love doing interviews. Like, they interview with everybody. Come on over to the house.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And they stepped that up. And when questioned about that, they do the same thing. They always respond with their whole litany of verses.
Right.
And they thought Obama was the beast.
Yeah, that's not unsurprising, right? I mean, that was a pretty common thought among a lot of the prophecy pundits.
Well, I mean, we've both known people who thought that Obama probably was the beast or some other biblical figure in
right.
Armageddon.
Yeah. Yep. Know some people personally that thought that way.
Right.
So, it's hard, right, looking at their eschatology, because it's not, you know, it kind of falls into that category of it's not really wrong, per se. But again, like everything else that they do, their emphasis is just backwards, right? They have one document, again, it's just filled with proof texts, called The Lord is Coming. And about 10 pages into it, they start adding commentary to the verses instead of just listing them. So like they listed them, and then they went back and they did them all again in chronological order with commentary. But I don't recall, as I was looking through it, you know, this might be one of the pages that's, or documents that's 90 some of the pages long. So as I was looking through it, I don't recall very many, if any at all, commentaries on the goodness of Christ's coming. It's all about judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one that really, really stuck out to me just because of the way that it's worded. On Luke 18, 1 through 8, and the emphasis is marked on 7 and 8, which again, right, go and read the entire context because it matters. This is a parable, but anyway. And shall not God avenge his own elect who cry out day and night to him, though he bears long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he really find faith on the earth? And their commentary, word for word, I'm going to read it. Now this is a beautiful passage. When the Lord returns on judgment day, it is revenge time on those hellbound sinners that opposed the elect of God, persecuted them, and hated them.
Hmm.
So, like I said, the wording, the wording is what stuck out to me. When they're finding it beautiful, that God is coming and bringing vengeance. I don't know about you, right? But as a Christian, I don't find that beautiful.
I can almost guarantee you I know who wrote that. That sounds exactly like Shirley Phillips Roper.
Oh, probably. But I don't like the thought at all of God coming back and people that I know who are opposed to him being judged.
Right.
That's not a beautiful thing.
That's because you were taught a different gospel.
I was taught the gospel. Actually, I only recently learned the gospel. I was taught a gospel. But another point, I'm really surprised that, you know, they call themselves a Baptist church, that there's not a super strong emphasis on the rapture.
Well, they were originally, you know, planted by a Baptist church, but I will say that every single other Baptist church in the country will say they do not associate with these people.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, they're
I'm not saying you're the Baptist church is right, but I'm just saying they all vehemently deny these people, you know?
Yeah. It's just, it kind of points me back to their kind of their Puritan theology, because the Puritans were pre-rapture. But yeah, so it's, they spent a lot of time on the judgment of Christ, but not any that I could find on how that return is going to be happening, which I can actually appreciate because the Bible nor the early church writers are solid on that topic. So tell me about this idea of the 144,000.
So,
because I didn't find that anywhere in their eschatology docs.
They hate the Jewish people because right. They kill Christ, and they're sinners, and they reject God. Their words, not mine. Mm-hmm. But they believe that God in the end times is going to set aside and save 144,000 Jewish people, and that they were going to travel to Jerusalem and be the leader of those people and help direct them in the end times to God. Their goal was to leave the country and go to Jerusalem. They all, if they had lost their court case, their Supreme Court case, they were all planning to go there. They are banned from many other countries where they have either tried or wanted to go do protest or pickets, yeah. Not protest. Not all countries have freedom of speech like we do, and some have just, even if they do or don't have freedom of speech, have banned, like made it where their passports can't go there.
Yeah, Canada and the UK, I know for sure, have banned them from entry to their countries.
Yes, which is interesting because members who have left have traveled to those places and tried to see if they could or couldn't travel to those places later.
Mm-hmm.
And we're eventually allowed into like Canada and stuff. But yeah, so it's this weird little thing that, and with the Obama thing, they thought that was getting closer, that was going to happen.
Right.
And you see, again, I'm getting that from that Megan Phelps Roper in her book where she mentions that about the 144,000. When she got out, she became friends with somebody who had engaged her on Twitter. And one of the people who challenged her beliefs in a very logical, direct way was a Jewish man. They actually went and protested. He organized these Jewish festival things. And they went and protested at these festivals. And later on, she actually went to this thing, this conference. It was a Jewish conference. I don't know if it was a festival. Where in the past she was protesting outside, and now she was inside giving a talk about she used to hate these people, and now she knows better, basically.
Right.
And they got to ask her questions about it and stuff, and she was amazed by how they treated her compared to how they treated her when she was outside. Some of the same people that outside had spit on her and got in her face and yelled and screamed and she was so scared of was in the talk, but treated her entirely differently. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, that finishes up my notes. I want to make one final point that some of the things that they teach, right? Like the return of Christ, right? Christ is coming in judgment. I mean, that's what the creeds say, right? He's coming to judge the living and the dead. It's what the Bible says. Some of the things they teach are not necessarily wrong. They just teach them poorly. And they teach them with the wrong emphasis. Some of the things that they teach are flat out wrong. You know, hyper-Calvinism, sorry to some of our listeners, is flat out wrong.
I will mention that most of our friends are not hyper-Calvinists, but we do have friends who are Calvinist.
Right. The fact that God hates people is flat out wrong. But take that back. The fact that God hates everyone and wants to send everyone to hell is flat out wrong. Their choice to use proof texting, again, you know, like I said, it's not always wrong, but it misses out on so much of the history and the core story of the Bible. Any thoughts?
No, I think we've covered that pretty well. I think we now have a better understanding of what they believe, kind of why they believe it, and where that deviates, like we talk about in our intro, where they went wrong.
Nice. Well, then, so join us next week as we dive into some of the social issues that Westboro Baptist Church experiences and that those who interact with Westboro Baptist Church experience. We'll see you then. Okay, 116 is not too bad. For only talking about three topics.
Yeah.
I enjoyed digging into each topic.
Thank you for joining us here on Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. Don't forget that we have our website, faithfraudsfalsehoods.com, where we post a more detailed blog with references so that you can go and take a look at all of this information for yourself. Also, remember to share this with a friend and help us get the word out there for everyone else. We'll see you in the next one.